Mormon Matters Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation and is seeking to build financial support separate from Mormon Stories Podcast. All donations to Mormon Matters are fully tax deductible and go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for Mormons like you. To support the podcast or to join the community, please become a monthly subscriber today at mormonmatters.org.
Welcome, everyone, to another Mormon Matters podcast. This is your host, Dan Weatherspoon, and we are going to kind of go back to the origins of Mormon Matters today. When it first got started, it began as a podcast that says, let's go through the news of the week and just kind of reflect on it and sort of did short bursts. And it eventually evolved into a little bit more of a long form, thoughtful, let's take on topics no matter if they're, you know, freshly in the news or not. And so we had these big, long, extended dives, but every once in a while we get something that happens in the church that we just say, let's dive in and process it. We don't have these high expectations that these are the final words, but we get together a panel of people who are watchers or good thinkers about these different topics and throw them on. And that's the case today as we talk about the announcements that were made on June 23rd in a special broadcast that pretty much anybody was invited to go to their stake center, or they webcasted as well. And it was on missionary work, and among the different things that they did in the broadcast was announce a new emphasis on not only member missionary work, but they're kind of opening up regular missionary work to the full-time missionaries to be far more use of the social media tools and different things. So we're excited just to talk about that, speculate about the impact of that, share some stories. We have one of our guests here who actually served as a missionary in one of the areas that was piloting at least the Facebook missionary part of it. So we'll be happy to have her share her stuff. So with that introduction, let me just have everybody on the panel introduce themselves. Derek Clements, I think you've been on the most. Would you give everybody a little bit of a background, and especially the parts that connect with missionary work?
Cool. Well, yeah, thanks, Dan. I'm really excited to be back on the podcast again. So I'm a BYU student. I'm studying English. I started a storytelling show in Provo called The Porch. And this summer, I'm actually away at an internship in New York City.
With the coolest podcast on the planet. Come on.
Are
you allowed to say?
Mormon Matters is up there. But yeah, no, it's with Radiolab. Cool. It's really, really fun. My interest in missionary work, I think, comes from a lot of different things. Really, since 2006 or so, the missionary program has been a big part of my life, because that's when I served my own mission to Brazil, the Recife mission. And then I taught at the MTC for close to 4 years, and I saw sort of some changes in the curriculum there during that time. It was very exciting. And then right now, I'm not teaching at the MTC anymore, but I am waiting for a sister missionary. My girlfriend is serving in Tucson. So missionary work is something that I have a very strong interest in, I guess you could say.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Stephen Carter, welcome back to the show. You're going to be representing my generation of missionary workers.
Oh, come on. I'm not that old,
yeah,
man.
Okay. I'm 10 years older than you, but definitely you're going to be the outlier in terms of age with this particular panel, having served your mission in Toronto, Canada, right?
Yeah, I was in Toronto.
Good. Well, give everybody the broader information about you and what you do.
Well, I'm the editor at Sunstone Magazine. I'm on this podcast every once in a while when I want to feel famous. And I don't know, I'm writing books. And very soon I will have the iPlate Volume 2 Kickstarter, which is a Book of Mormon comic book. So you're all going to want to go and fund that.
All right. Well, the Volume 1 was very popular, so that's great to get it out there. Jet Atwood and you are putting that together, and you're a great team. Just one of the reasons I brought Stephen on, he just happened to mention some interesting thoughts in an email to me and some others. And also, Stephen writes these amazing personal essays. He's, I think, our preeminent personal essayist nowadays. And some of them were about missionary work and the whole mission experience. So we're just thrilled to have him bring this broader perspective of how to talk about your experiences and if anything might change as we speculate about a more digital-type mission. So thank you,
Stephen.
Can I
put that on the back of my next book, Mormonism's Preeminent Essayist? Dan Weatherspoon.
You bet, man.
Thanks, man.
For a free copy, anyway. Anyway, thanks so much for being here again, Stephen. Emily Clough, welcome to the show for the first time, and you're our star experiential panelist today, at least with some of this stuff. So thanks for coming to the show. Would you tell us all about you as well as your mission and some of the things that you did?
Yeah, thanks. I'm excited to be on. I'm from Washington, D.C. I'm actually in Utah right now. Graduated from the University of Utah. I'm a performance auditor and a photographer. They don't really go together, but I do both. And I served a mission to the California Santa Rosa Mission. I got home last summer, and I was a Facebook missionary and a blogging missionary during my time there.
We cannot wait to hear what all that means. And and boy, I went to your Facebook page, which I guess is the same Facebook page you had on your mission. And you are a photographer, for one thing. That was crazy. And it was fun to kind of see your blog, your mission blog there.
Awesome.
I was able to access that, so thanks. And we can share or not share as you direct us on that. Hey, to start off, let's just go back to the big announcements and the meeting that they called on June 23rd. It was a big buildup saying this was going to be a historic meeting, and I don't know if it, I guess it meets that criteria, but it was a different sort of meeting than I expected to be. And Derek and I have talked a little bit ahead of time about it. And Derek, would you lead us through what this 2-hour of event was like?
Sure. Well, I had first heard about this when it was announced sort of in the last several weeks, but it was sort of somebody first noticed it, I want to say a couple months ago. So I've been anticipating this meeting, thinking that maybe something really exciting was going to happen, some sort of big change. I know that this is a really sort of historic time for the missionary department, because with the recent age changes, there's a lot more equality in numbers between male and female missionaries. And so I was sort of thinking it would be got to be something to do with that. And then I had seen this video or this talk from somebody in the missionary department, not a general authority, but an employee who was speaking to the Virginia, what's it called, Southern Virginia University? Is that the Mormon school down there? Anyway.
Right, yes.
And saying things like, this is going to be like the biggest announcement the church has made, most significant meeting of the church in this century. If you want to know if the heavens are open, show up to this thing. So that made me go, oh man, this is going to be huge. And so I was in my seat, you know, very excited to listen. And then I was really confused because when they seemed to definitely announce some things about missionaries will be using Facebook now more, and those will be sort of rolling this out to missions. It won't be everyone doing it at once, but they've been trying it in different places. And I had already sort of heard about this sort of vaguely. And so it wasn't a huge shock to me that would happen. And then the other announcement that I got was that they'd be doing a lot less tracting in general. Seems like there's a shift away from door-to-door missionary work toward things like tours of chapels and different things like that. And then really, though, for the most of the meeting, it was a presentation of stories from the general authorities, lots of videos illustrating different types of missionary work happening. And that's really what the bulk of the meeting was about, was sort of thinking about missionary work. And that's really not what I was expecting it to be. So I have to admit, I was a little bit bummed when they made the announcements in the beginning, I kind of just assumed that the big announcement they were saving for the end.
I did too. Yeah, it's all Elder Perry is, well, there's this interesting thing I'll talk about in a second, but Elder Perry was the first major speaker, and he's just kind of giving what seemed to me like a normal general conference type speech, and he's working in these things, and so I had to like pay attention. Oh,
yeah.
that's a new change,
right, yeah,
and he's announcing stuff here. So yeah, it was pretty low-key how they did it. It wasn't like pause for effect, drum roll, good stuff. It was in there.
And I think it's really interesting too, and maybe notable to just note, I don't think that this gentleman that was speaking was like, you know, false advertising. I don't think he was like purposefully like trying to get people there like sneakily or something. So I think the fact that there are people in the missionary department that see these changes as huge and sweeping, whereas I might not see it that way, but the fact that they do, I think, gives us some room to think about why and how these changes will be implemented. But then, you know, as I've been thinking about the meeting, just in general, I actually did quite enjoy it once I was able to separate from the expectations. I think that some cool things were said about just sort of slight, I mean, again, I get, all changes in the church are slight and gradual, but there were some slight things that I think could really help improve the way things are done in missionary work. Not necessarily just to make it more effective or efficient, but just to kind of get us to focus on the right track instead of some of the traps we fall into sometimes with missionary work.
Terrific, terrific. One of the things, just to let everybody know, Elder Holland conducted this. This was at the Marriott Center, which is BYU's big sports arena where the basketball team plays and all that stuff, and they have the devotionals. They had basically a huge choir from the MTC there in Provo, and I'm guessing that pretty much everybody who's at the MTC came over to the meeting as well. And then there were regular folks there, as well as it was 173 mission presidents that are, you know, in the three-year rotation. So 173 presidents who are about to, I think, enter the field tomorrow. I think it's July 1st when new presidents go out. We're recording this on June 30th. And so it was just this nice thing to get a peek into sort of their training. But it began with Elder Holland with live remotes to different folks that I kind of expected to be in. So at first they go to, I think it was the Washington, D.C. mission. And you have the mission president and his wife, and then you have what they're calling the mission council seated behind him, and they did a little interacting through Skype or whatever means that they hooked up with them. And again, prominently right there in this mission council were sister missionaries, and I know that that's been a change that's been unfolding the last few months, mm-hmm. where missions are going to be led with far more involvement of women. And so that's a thrilling thing to see. They went the same thing to a stake and award. I think the stake was it in South America somewhere? I should have written it down. Where they had the stake president and his stake council, that also involved the stake women auxiliary leaders, and they're calling that the council. And then they went to a ward council, I believe, in Hawaii. And so you kind of you're seeing this, and Elder Holland's using language about sisters and everybody's voice counting. And then later on, when they did some video segments and they peeked in on ward councils and things like that, there was definitely an effort to show that women are very, very involved. So I thought it was a nice thing. I thought they were going to do more, didn't you, Derek? With going back and forth with these councils, other than just kind of hooking them up and saying hey at first.
Right. Yeah. No. It was very interesting. The sort of subtlety and the way that gender equality was coming, like sort of like Elder Holland was sort of creeping at it a little bit and saying what I thought was a really important point, that when the brethren were deciding to lower the missionary age, that it was very important for them to bring on auxiliary leaders and female leaders of the church to be part of that revelatory process, which I thought was a really, really important thing. But I did think it was going to be more explicitly about that. I've heard people say that with all the new sister missionaries, this type of meeting would have been a really good opportunity to explicitly start being more, explaining more about how men and women can have some more similar responsibilities on missions. And so I think that was disappointing in some ways, but I do think there was some stuff underneath it all that was positive in that direction.
Yeah, I did too. Emily, can I hit you up for a second? Did you come home from your mission before they more explicitly went to the mission council kind of format?
I came home at the end of July of last year.
Okay, so that would have beat this new change, yes. Right? So, yeah. Well, listeners out there, please, if any of you have experience or been hearing from people who are out in the field and are talking about this, the new way that they're organizing missions with sister trainers, I think they're called, and they're going to be similar to APs, and they're certainly doing much, much more to try to make sure that it's not just quote unquote the priesthood that are you know the leaders and everybody else is not the leaders. So I don't know what to say there, but I'd love to get a feel for how that's unfolding and working out there. So Emily or Stephen, anything so far about the way we've been describing the last Sunday announcement that you want to weigh in on? There's a few more things that I'll definitely go over here real quick.
Well, it's pretty obvious to me that you guys have forgotten what it was like to tract on your mission, because I think the announcement of much less tracting is one of the most inspired things I've ever heard.
Nice. So it was quite historic, and the heavens are open for Stephen Carter.
It just came, 15 years too late.
Oh, interesting. That's fun. Emily, anything that hit you?
Nope. I don't have anything to add on that.
Hey, a couple more things. Or Derek, did you want to keep going?
One thing that I think is that I was thinking about is that it's interesting when we look at like this new sort of way that sisters are leading in missions and stuff. In my experience as an MTC teacher, most of my bosses were actually women, and I do think it's interesting how the structure of sort of how, I mean, I wasn't a missionary when I was an MTC teacher, but there's definitely a similarity in sort of hierarchy and structure. But there wasn't that disparity between gender, and I just thought that sort of was an interesting thought.
Cool. Well, just to give those who didn't watch it a little bit better feel, after Elder Perry's talk, which really did do the announcements, they did several prepackaged video type things. And so, again, I think that in some ways that's also a signal that the church is, let's use media of all sorts. Mm-hmm. And they're recognizing that high production values are important and things like that. And for conversations with people who are telling the real life experiences of missionary work, they focused on three different stories that happened all in Florida, Central Florida, and various converts and various members of the church, like just doing that extra thing, like, hey, you're inviting these kids to your son's 8th birthday party, slip in a little announcement inviting him to the baptism as well. And so people told the story of how that led to a sister who had been baptized many, many years ago, been inactive for years, kind of saying, wow. And so when she comes to the birthday party, she goes, I was LDS. I am LDS. I just haven't gone. And that started a process where eventually her husband joined the church as well. And they did these nice scenarios. And as far as, looking conversational, they did a pretty good job when they'd tell the story from the ward council of the bishop speaking and then the sister who did this and the brother who did this. And it was a nicely produced stories from this Tampa thing. And the main thing was just, helping people catch the vision. So if anything besides what you were saying earlier, Derek, it seemed to me was, obviously the mission is going to shift to at least these other tools. But I thought they did a really nice job of low-keying what it means to be a member missionary. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people feel like there's this real high hurdle, and especially, I wouldn't know what to say. I don't know how I would articulate the doctrines or the teachings. They even went out of their way to say it's not about the teachings. It's like helping somebody catch it. I got like sort of underneath the surface, and especially with a couple of the stories of the people that joined, you could get a sense from them that they weren't concentrating on, I learned that Joseph Smith's a prophet. Or this or that. It was I kind of wanted to step up and be a better person. There was this inner call within me that I wanted to have something more in my life. And so I thought it was just this nice lowering of, okay, if we're going to say every member a missionary, it doesn't mean that you have to be doing splits. it just means that we just want to share what joys we have and things like that. So I kind of caught that was the overall vision. What about you guys? Any sense of that?
I agree with you, Dan. And that's something that I took away from the meeting that I think could be a really, really positive change in the way that we think about friendship. Because so often we think about friendship with people that aren't members of the church. We're sort of, it's so hard to navigate. I feel like in my life I haven't really always been the best at having friends that weren't members of the church. And I think part of it is this idea that there's always this undercurrent of, I need to be giving them something. I need to be asking them. I need to be inviting them to things. And I think as I've sort of become an adult, I've really sort of struggled with that because I've recognized how much I, need to learn from other people and how much I they can offer me in their perspectives, and it's not all about what I can bring to them. And I do think that if friendship were to be something that we really valued apart from bringing people into the church, which I really think that, like you said, Dan, that was a big part of that meeting, I think that could be a really positive change.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, the other segments were, I guess it was Elder Neil Anderson who was kind of doing the he would integrate pre-recorded talking to us and then the stories from Central Florida. Elder Nelson interviewed a sister who's now in the General Relief Side Presidency, or one of the General Auxiliaries, one of the counselors, about her conversion story. And it was just this sort of low-key, you know, thing. And it was a sense of, you never know what the Lord's doing to people around you. They're sort of preparing them in different ways, you know, for possibly being receptive. So don't kind of think that you have to map out ahead of time exactly what's going to happen. Just open your mouth and maybe it happen. But they also definitely said, do not ever drop a friendship or ever convey that you only want to be friends with them as a means to an end of them becoming baptism. You know, a real relationship is what we're after here. So, you know, whether they join the church or not, please don't do it. So that's always welcome for people to just say, hey, it's okay for me to associate with non-Mormons.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes people need that little thing. So it was a fun meeting. It was 2 hours long, beautiful songs from the missionaries, you know, great little video packages that went here and there. So
yeah, and to echo the video quality, Dan, we've come a long way since the Johnny Lingo days, I think. it's the films the church has produced over the years it's a really fun history to look at. And it's true, like the production quality is high now.
You're trying to shake my testimony, aren't you, Derek? I love Johnny Lingo.
Man, Stephen, we got you on here for comic relief, my friend. No, you're doing great. Thanks, Ed. Yeah, definitely. Definitely memories from our childhood, Stephen. Whether with me, I wouldn't call them love affairs, but yeah. Well, let's move in here, and this is where we'll start bringing in Emily in a second here. But let's just quickly say some of the specific things that Elder Perry said. So, like Derek was saying, it's less tracting, more use of social media. And then he went on to say it will be chiefly in the mornings, because mornings seem to be the least busy time or the least productive normal time for missionaries. And then he didn't explicitly say this, but I'm getting the impression, and from my pre-conversation with Emily, that he talked about the church buildings will now be open for missionaries to lead tours for those who are interesting. So to kind of, we won't have this sort of, oh, the church is always locked during the weekday kind of thing. But Emily, I got the impression that really the church building is going to be open because that's where they want the missionaries to come and to log on and do their internet access. Is that kind of what you sense?
Yes, definitely. We would do Facebook mostly at family history centers. So we were in the church a lot, and we did a lot of church tours on my mission as well too. I think it's definitely something that they're planning on continuing, obviously.
Okay. Well, one of the things that surprised me, this church tours thing, is that really something that people are interested in? Because, you know, somebody said something on Facebook right after this, like, hey, let's go around in the big circle and show identical classrooms. What's there to see in our churches?
No, I would say in our mission, no, most people weren't interested. The way that we were really successful in getting anyone to do a church tour was we would have a free car wash. And so some of the missionaries would be washing the cars of the people that would come. And while the people were waiting for their car to be washed, we would offer to take them on a tour of the church while they waited. And so that was really the way we got them in, because, you know, if you tried other things like advertising around town or just telling people on door approaches, hey, we're having a church tour, most of them wouldn't show up, but a car wash would bring them in.
Right. Cool. Well, that's good. We'll get back to you for more stuff. So the church buildings will be open, and it does seem like they want you to use the church's internet. And YouTube, you, Derek, and Emily, you may know better than me for sure, because I don't have a smartphone, and I'm never really, like, trying to access the web. But isn't the church's Wi-Fi, whatever's running in their buildings, it doesn't allow you to go to lots of different sites? There's certain parameters that they've got in place, right?
Yeah. I don't know exactly what they are, but I've been blocked a couple times on Facebook and stuff.
Okay. So that makes sense that, you know, with young people on a mission, and they definitely want to have you in a controlled environment to some degree, at least as you go on Facebook or the other different ways that you can interact online. And Emily, just help again just with this part. We'll talk into about what really Facebook missionary is later, but was there some rule, and it seems like they're probably going to continue it, that when you're online, your companion has to be right there to always be able to see what's on your screen?
Yes. when it started out, you didn't have to have your companion necessarily right next to you. Like if you were in a library, you could just go wherever there was computers available. But they did change it to, yes, your companion has to be looking at your screen the whole time.
Actually looking or just available to possibly look over so they wouldn't catch you, you know, somewhere where you shouldn't. They're actually like watching what you're typing and things?
Yes, they are now. Now, how often people actually follow that, but that's technically the rule, is you watch what they're typing, you give your input, you see everything that's going on.
Okay, so one computer at a time per companionship.
Yes.
Does that include when you're writing like emails and stuff too? To like family?
No. Mm-mm.
So your P-Day emailing is, it's okay to not have them looking at your
right.
screen. Okay, cool. So among the other things they title says is we will make sure that safety is paramount for our missionaries. What did they mean by that? What's the safety main concerns? I mean, I can understand if it was Skype or something like that, but what's the Facebook safety issue?
Well, I think just in my experience with it, the kind of dangers that came into it is if your companion was more low-key or they weren't sitting by you, you know, there certainly were missionaries that would go maybe look at porn. But in terms of like Facebook itself, we certainly had a few missionaries that if their companions weren't really aware, they would start adding people from back home or
got it.
Pretty women to kind of communicate with, kind of a thing. So those kind of dangers.
Okay, so it's more dangers that the missionaries will start to be less focused on missionary work rather than they would access things that would be personally harmful or somebody taking advantage of them type stuff.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
So we have them in the church building most likely. So that means more keys that will be given to missionary companionships. That's interesting. Among the different things that you picked up is that they'll be able to use text messages. And then there was a mention of iPads. Does anyone have a sense of, I mean, right now, is it standard that every companionship would have at least one cell phone with them where they could be texting? And do you suppose these are going to be iPads that the missions will provide to a companionship?
Well, from what I know, we, in my mission, and maybe Derek's too, I don't know how long ago you served, but we all had cell phones. And we definitely texted. That's the primary form of communication we used to set up appointments, was to text people. In terms of the iPads, we were in a church meeting with church headquarters, and they told us that they were testing iPads and that they anticipated that all missions would go iPad. And so we knew that was coming. It didn't actually happen while I was still out, though.
Now, does the missions or the church pay for the cell phones for each companionship? And that's the guess that they would pay for these iPads, too?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So did you have, like, really limited plans? You know, I'm just curious on your cell packages and stuff.
We didn't. We texted all the time.
So unlimited text,
yeah.
Okay.
And the only thing that we really had a restriction on is they blocked that we couldn't send picture messages. But, you know, we all live kind of in this day and age, and people respond more to a text message than they do to a call. And so we would call someone, they'd never pick up, but if we sent them a text message, they'd say, yeah, come on by. So that was just where we went, yeah.
Okay. Well, that, to me, was the main announcements. Let's do this. Emily, if you'll tell us what it meant to you to be a Facebook missionary, what's the actual parameters of that? How big a part of your day was it? You know, your successes and stuff like that. And then after we kind of finish this, I want us at least to start to explore, do any of us suppose that other technologies will start folding in besides, you know, iPads? And I'm guessing the iPads will just really end up being the way to communicate Facebook. You know, so I don't know what they would be doing with those beyond that. But do you want to just tell us? So Santa Rosa Mission is Northern California, for those who don't know. It's Napa Valley and those kinds of places. So you were one of how many missions that you knew were piloting this?
There were 8 or 9 of us piloting it.
Okay. And mostly states, or do you know, were there worldwide ones?
They were
well?
Stateside.
Okay, and that is an interesting question for us to bring up later. Is this going to, you know, if you're in the Philippines or something, you know, or other places around the world, will there really be a change in missionary work based upon these technologies? So that's something that we can kind of speculate on later. But yeah, tell us the story of being a Facebook missionary.
Okay, well, when I got called to my mission, I had a friend that had a friend that was out in my mission already, and she mentioned to me that he was on Facebook, and she thought that maybe they were doing some program with Facebook missionary work. So I kind of had a brief idea of it before I went out in the field, but I went out, and they made me a Facebook missionary at the very end of my first transfer. And at that time, there was only about 20 or 25 of us in a mission of about 180, 190 missionaries. In the beginning, we would have to get on for 2 hours a day. And that was because in addition to the Facebook, we also, that group of us, the 20, 25, had to write a blog as well. And so we got all that time so we could write blogs and things like that. But the primary thing we did once we were Facebook missionaries is first we had to go deactivate our personal Facebook account from back home. Then we opened the new one, and we had to have our name listed as a missionary. So it didn't just say Emily Clough. Mine said Sister Emily Clough. And what we did is we went and we added all the members from the wards in which we were serving, less actives, investigators. We were encouraged not to really add a lot of people from around the world, and definitely not anyone from back home, because our focus was on where we were called. And that was always what they'd say, you know, like, even though this is a big internet tool, you've been called to this mission, so your focus needs to be with these people.
I'm curious, what percentage of people that you would attempt to friend on Facebook would accept your invitation, do you suppose?
Almost all. And some of them, you know, the members were kind of used to it. They'd already seen a few Facebook missionaries, but it was really remarkable to see how, you know, maybe less actives who would not let us in the door would add us on Facebook, and they would talk to us on Facebook. And so once we had that all set up, we kind of focused on how we wanted the Facebook to look. We were encouraged from church headquarters to look human, so to speak. So we put up pictures like maybe of P-Day, and our status updates just needed to be uplifting so we could quote scripture or, you know, some nice quote. It didn't have to necessarily be a scripture, but it had to not be too worldly. For me, since I was a photographer, one of the big things I did is I took all these pictures I had taken before I went on my mission and would put like inspirational quotes with them. So that's kind of how we worked it. And then we would try and chat with people a lot, be really conversational. If I was talking to an investigator or less active or anyone, it wasn't like dive right in and teach them lesson one right there on chat. You just talk to them about their lives and try and build a relationship. And then if they mentioned anything that could maybe go kind of the gospel way in terms of the discussion, we would go that direction and just talk to them about that. And we used it a lot as daily contact with our investigators. So I don't know, it was really, really effective tool. It was kind of interesting to watch the people that maybe had a hard time letting missionaries in the door or felt too much pressure in a missionary presence, how they really just opened up to us. And we could effectively teach them at their own pace instead of, you know, forcing this four lesson plan on them in person. It was also really interesting once the mission expanded and we started adding pretty much all the missionaries to Facebook, how it kind of made the playing field more even. There weren't really the rock star missionaries as much, because now everyone was on the same level, and those that were maybe...
Meaning everybody's now a Facebook missionary. You guys were the rock stars prior to this?
Well, no, I don't like think of myself that way, because, no, but maybe okay. Like this...
But there was some self-selection because you guys were good writers enough that could manage the blog type stuff?
Yes, but also, you know, I think we've all served with missionaries that were kind of really good salespeople or really charismatic and got a lot of attention. And so the missionaries that weren't like that were able to kind of still shine on Facebook where maybe they wouldn't have been able to do that in person.
So that was Stephen. Stephen was the rock star missionary, I'd imagine.
you know, I was kind of a terrible missionary. there was this spring, the second spring I was in Toronto, and there was sort of this transition period in the weather where I could still wear a very light jacket, and this particular jacket didn't I had lost my suit clip name tag, and I only had the little shirt pocket clip left. And so the only pocket that would fit on was kind of down by my thigh because it was a really long coat. And so you couldn't tell right off the bat if I was a missionary or not. And suddenly the whole world opened up to me because I could go to the bus stops and talk with the people as a person instead of immediately broadcasting that I was a missionary. And I was much happier then, but whenever I was out as a missionary, I was just terrible.
Meaning you're shy and introverted, whereas online you might have shown?
Yeah, I just don't have the personal charisma to go out and sparkle people on the streets and make them want to talk to me or let me in the door. I know how to write, so you know, I guess I was born 20 years too late or too early or something. I don't know. Maybe I could have been a good missionary.
Yeah, interesting. So, Emily, that's interesting that you brought that up, and that is an interesting thing where certain missionaries who don't shine in the one way, this could all of a sudden just be fantastic for them.
Yeah, definitely. I think so with that very much, and I think it really just gave a lot of missionaries the opportunity to use talents that they were good at. I felt like I was able to use my photography, and with the blog I wrote, I felt like that was really beneficial because I was kind of I don't know what the right word would say, unconventional missionary, and didn't really necessarily subscribe to a lot of things in the mission culture. And so I was more able to write blogs that I felt represented the gospel, how I interpreted it, that maybe if I had to do like lesson one, I couldn't have just done, you know, in someone's home.
Interesting. Now, your blog was called The Hour of Your Mission Has Come. Was that what everybody's was called? Or that was just one that you came up with for yourself?
That's what I came up with for myself. We had to title our own.
And did you have to get approval and all that stuff, I imagine?
Actually, no. When we set up our blogs, we just started writing them, and our mission president and his wife would read them. And so that's how they kind of policed our blogs.
Okay, monitor. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about blogging in a second, but I want to get a better feel for what kind of exchanges you're having on Facebook with folks. So take us through, and did you ever teach? You said, you know, sometimes you'd steer the conversation in gospel directions, but was there any, did it ever show up as, here's discussion number one, here's discussion number two, or was it always just like, let's ease the tension so that eventually we can come to your house to actually teach?
Both, actually. Like, we certainly had a part where we were trying to become friendly with people or work with their comfort levels and hope that they could progress to meeting with, you know, the missionaries in person. But we also reported numbers weekly. So we reported what lessons we would teach. And so definitely we would teach all the lessons if the opportunity came about. We had a member who had a girlfriend that was not a member. And we'd met her a few times. She was really nice to us, but she wasn't really interested in meeting with the missionaries. And so I added her on Facebook, and she would talk to me on Facebook anytime I was on. She would chat with me, and so we built a relationship, and then I would just talk to her about the gospel. And I actually taught her all of the lessons online over the course of several months. And then once she felt like her testimony had grown, she decided that she was ready to meet with the missionaries in person to do formal lessons so that she could be baptized. So that was a really interesting experience.
Okay, so I just now picked up something I maybe hadn't before. I kind of thought it was just going to be the message system, you know, where you do one and they may answer it a little bit later in the next day or something. It sounds like you were a lot on the instant message chat feature.
Yes, quite a bit.
So you'd say that was more frequent than the other?
You certainly would email people. You know, we'd email them on Facebook, but if they were online, we would try and talk to them.
Okay, good. So you can just sort of see who was online. All right, very, very interesting. Now, when you're teaching, like, who's got the keyboard? And is your companion whispering in your ear, say this, say this? I just try to get a feel for the dynamics of of that.
Well, it would kind of depend. You know, usually you would just be typing and you'd be saying, you know, your companion would be reading the conversation and you would write something out and you might ask your companion, is there anything I should change on this or does this sentence make sense? And yeah, it's fine, or no, change it to say this. So it was just very much like a normal chat conversation back and forth with someone. Your companion mostly read it. Sometimes added a suggestion, but usually just observed.
And maybe the next day they're at the keyboard and you're playing that role or something.
Right. And what we would do a lot is, see, it kind of changed throughout the mission. It was like at first, you know, 2 hours, just the one, and then it would change to, the new rule was one missionary was logged in for half an hour, and then it would switch and the other companion logged in. So occasionally you would be teaching somebody and then you would have to log out, and so your companion would log in and then you just resume teaching under a different person.
That'd be awkward and strange, but it was like a hard 30 minutes. Like, it couldn't be just, okay, well, with the next natural break, we'll switch over. But it was it timed by the computer or something?
No, I think that has to go back to just kind of the personality of the missionary. Like me, no, okay. I was not about to end a conversation because it'd been 30 minutes, right. But there certainly were like the APs or something that would.
All right, interesting. It sounds like a normal mission in many, many ways. Oh, so interesting. Well, Derek and Stephen, you're probably hearing this for the first time. I had a half-hour conversation with Emily a few days ago. What's striking you as you're hearing about this, and what questions do you have for her?
Yeah, well, Dan, like you, I'm intrigued by this idea of teaching online because I sort of had assumed it was more of a point of contact, and as something that's been sort of in my head since the announcement was that online, I would say the internet has been a very formative thing for my Mormonism and my testimony, but mostly it's been an intellectual place, not a spiritual place. I've gone to the internet to learn about the complicated things in church history and learn how to grapple with certain complicated ideas. And so I think of the internet as a place where it's much easier to deal with those issues, but also from a much more of an intellectual perspective. And I wonder, Emily, if you felt like the chatting environments were an opportunity, like, was that an environment where you could have a spiritual conversation, or did the conversations lend more to the questions that were more intellectual?
I actually felt like it was really spiritual a lot of the times, and I think maybe the buildup for that was, I remember when they first made me a Facebook missionary, we had this meeting with church headquarters, and I think it was L. Tom Perry that said this. I am not certain, so can't hold me to it. But they were talking about how God has always promised that he would send missionaries to wherever his people are. And there was 1 billion people on Facebook, and so of course it would make perfect sense that God would send his missionaries to Facebook. And this apostle also mentioned that he had a firm belief that God was behind the creation of Facebook. And I remember hearing that at first and being like, what? And then I kind of let it sink in a bit, and I thought, well, I can see that. I believe that God's behind all sorts of technology, and this is such a powerful medium to bring about messages. Now, of course, you know, it's not all serious. I remember being on Facebook many times as a missionary and thinking, man, these people are sure wasting their lives being on Facebook all day. But then, of course, I came home, and now that's all I do. But there was always kind of a mix, and you would see the ridiculous things that people would post sometimes or whatever. And
that's right. Yeah, they're not just reading you. You're reading just their normal day-to-day chat like any other friend getting the feed.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you think there will be more bombardment of difficult questions to missionaries with this new stuff?
You know, I don't know. I didn't feel like we got a ton of difficult questions online. I suppose it could be a possibility, but it just would depend on the missionary. And, you know, all of us here have served missions. We're probably used to some sort of difficult question, and I imagine they'll all handle it too.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Derek, you're just thinking the environment of the people that might really prefer this are also the kinds of people who probably are looking up Mormonism through a Google search in the, you know, 8 of the first 10 or some sort of level of difficult issues.
Yeah, I'm wondering now how much I'm just projecting my own experience on it, because that's definitely been my thing. But yeah, it's interesting to think about.
Stephen, any questions for Emily and just sort of the feel of how it worked in the pilot program and now it sounds like it's going to expand?
It sounds like great fun. Just to give you a quick context of what my mission was like, the cell phone was the size of a brick when I was on my mission, and and we used it as a stealth device. And so we would make an appointment with someone, my district leader had a cell phone and a plan, which he paid for himself. And I don't think the mission president actually knew that he had one. But we would go up to their door and we'd knock on it, and of course they wouldn't answer. And so he'd take out his phone and he'd dial it, and they'd pick it up and go, "Hello?" He'd say, "Hi, the missionaries are here. We're standing outside your front door."
Awesome.
And so that was the way that we got into people's houses, because people weren't very savvy about, you know, picking up the phone. It was the missionaries. They're standing outside your front door. But that sounds like a mission that I would probably have really enjoyed, just because I enjoy talking with people who actually want to talk with me, and I enjoy writing. It would have been a lot of fun to interact with people like that, because I just remember the deadly dull days of walking up and down urine infested hallways, knocking on doors, nobody opening it, and you knew that was going to go on the whole day and for the next week and the next week and the next week, and oh, it was soul killing. So I think this is really fantastic.
Now, that does bring up a question. Emily, if you were in the middle of a real really good conversation, was there the hard 1 hour or the hard 2 hour limit? Could you theoretically come back in the afternoon and set an appointment to kind of chat with somebody then?
I think that you probably could. More likely, you would try and schedule it for the next day. I was never really anal about the 1 hour limit. If I was in a conversation with somebody, I was going to finish it. But sometimes we would try things where we'd be like, you know, we're going to be online at this time, meet us, and we'll have, you know, an online scripture class or something. Mm-hmm. Those weren't really very successful. But I really love the point earlier that I think this really is positive for the missionaries too, because we all looked forward to Facebooking so much. We would usually do ours at night, not usually in the morning. And I remember we'd meet this group of elders to go do Facebook all at the same time. And I remember one of them saying, "My reward for getting through the day is Facebook." It was interesting. I knew he didn't mean it like to be rebellious, but just because it was such a great medium to use, and just, I don't know, it was kind of interesting. And I think, honestly, it made you feel like you were part of the world, too. You kind of got to see what was going on in the world and in other people's lives, and you felt more aware. So it was definitely the best part of the day.
Now, of course, the times you weren't on there, you did some tracting, I'm assuming, and then the rest was just appointments.
Right.
And teaching face-to-face.
Yes, definitely. Okay. We would use sometimes, you know, we were encouraged to use personal or companion study to maybe, like, come up with ideas for a blog or teaching.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Good. Well, I did want to talk a little bit more about the blog, and I remember in our pre-conversation you did sort of sense that maybe those that were selected early on were ones that, you know, somehow or other the mission presidency had determined that you were good writers and could represent yourself well. Do you sense that now it's going to be blogs for everybody? And so when it went mission-wide, was it blogs for pretty much anybody who wanted one?
When I started, it was pretty much required that you had to have a blog. But then as it expanded and they started adding most of the rest of the missionaries, they kind of did away with that. They said, you can have a blog if you want to, but you don't have to. And most people were not interested in doing it. My undergraduate degree was in journalism, so I was a strong enough writer.
Well, fun. Okay, so thank you. And that, I mean, when I talked with you before and now again, this does feel quite natural. It doesn't feel forced. It feels like a good thing. It was so interesting to learn from you that it really is only add the people that are in the Santa Rosa boundaries, and especially your own particular ward or, you know, your mission area boundaries. And so it was a question of truly working to the people that you were called to serve.
Yes, definitely. And one thing that I've been telling a lot of my friends that have been kind of concerned about this announcement is, you know, when we would add people on Facebook, you know, an investigator, a member, we did not go through their friends list and solicit their friends.
Oh, good. Good caution. Yeah.
So we were never trying to pick up people, you know, for missionary purposes through their friends. We really only focused on the people we knew in person. And so I think that's really important, because I've seen a lot of people really concerned about that. and missionaries just aren't going to do that with Facebook.
Any horror stories, any Facebook missionarying gone bad, to sort of an alert for things to watch for?
We certainly had a few. We had a few stories. If people want to get into trouble, they're going to get into trouble. It doesn't matter what it is. We certainly had a couple of elders that had to be removed for looking at porn. We had one elder who, even though we really focused, on people just in our area, quite often we would get friend requests from people in South America. And that was because the missionaries there knew we were doing Facebook. So they would tell their investigators, oh, you know, add missionaries online. And so it was kind of up to our discretion if we wanted to add these people from South America, but a lot of missionaries did. And we certainly had a couple of elders that would kind of become involved in online relationships with some of those women. So there was, you know, every once in a while there was that kind of problem that popped up, but that would pop up if you were online or not.
Mm-hmm. So that actually led me to questions. So the elders that are getting into, you know, viewing porn, obviously they couldn't get to those sites through the chapel access. So are these cell phones have, are they smartphones, or are smartphones disallowed?
No, there are no smartphones.
Okay, so it has to be just a regular cell.
Yeah.
So their internet access for the porn was through what means?
The library.
Oh, okay. So if they weren't in a church building, okay.
Emily, how much restriction? Give me a sense of the restriction in general. Like, because on Facebook there are all these links, and I'm thinking about now. Like, I get most of my news. This is sort of embarrassing from Facebook. You know, like if something big has happened in the world, I usually know about it first on Facebook, and then I'll click a link and read about it or whatever. But so, could you click through on links and? If not, it seems like it'd be a really big temptation to do that sometimes.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a temptation for some of it. And some of it, you know, when you're a missionary, you have so much of the sense of you have a higher purpose. We had specific rules on what websites we were allowed to access. So we could do Facebook, we could go to Mormon.org, we could go to LDS.org. We could access Google, like our Google account if we were doing a blog. But generally, we didn't ever click on things that people posted.
That's interesting. I think that kind of gets at this thing that I'm excited about with this, that it sounds like we're going to have to trust missionaries a little more than we used to. And I think I'm really all for that. I think that we restrict missionaries in so many ways that a lot of times they just don't have any breathing room. And they're, you know, they're adults. Like these people, they can make decisions. And I think as much as there will always be restrictions on these internet things, the more we go in that direction, the more we're just going to have to inevitably trust them, which I think is a good thing for the culture of missionaries.
I agree with that. And, you know, I think that missionaries are given kind of an opportunity with this to use good judgment. A really simple example of that is, you know, they told us, okay, just use LDS.org if you're trying to find a scripture. And I don't know how many of you have used the search function at LDS.org, but it is not very good, and it's very hard to find a certain scripture. And finally, we just kind of got to the point where we realized if we would just go to Google and search for the scripture, we could always find it, you know, really easy. And so we would do that instead of struggling to find it through LDS.org. It was just a case of good judgment. You know, if something was easier and wasn't crossing any lines, then we were willing to do it.
Very cool. Thank you so much for everything you taught us. That is great. And as we throw out some possibilities here, tell us what you think. Okay, so I want to eventually turn the time over to everybody for just speculation about, you know, how this might change the mission experience. And I know, Stephen, you have some stuff on the shaping of stories. But what about other technologies that, you know, social media technologies or whatnot? Do you suppose, for instance, anybody will missionaries be encouraged to do their own YouTube videos? Do you ever see the day that Skype conversations would be allowed? Things like that. Anybody with thoughts on those?
I would say no and no. I don't see any of that happening. Mm-mm.
Strong reasons why not? Or just it would be just like opening too big of Pandora's box?
I think so. I think that would just get real dangerous real quick. Just with the restrictions the missionaries on Facebook already have, I cannot fathom that they would ever be allowed to do that. We were not allowed on YouTube. We were encouraged to use a lot of Mormon messages online or or even use them for like dinner appointments, but we are encouraged to find them through, you know, Mormon.org or something. I just cannot fathom them ever letting missionaries do YouTube videos. But who knows, I guess.
Okay. Okay. No, I'm just throwing stuff out there as I imagine the wider world of technology and you know, if we're more firmly embracing it, what it might be. Stephen or Derek, any thoughts about other technologies that could be folded in safely?
Well, if you want to talk about being really safe, maybe we could do this without missionaries and we could just have technology doing our preaching for us. This was an idea that popped into my head when I was on my mission. I suddenly found it after watching On the Way Home for the 1 zillionth time. I thought, isn't it strange that I rely on this VHS player to bring in the spirit, and it usually does a better job than I do? Why does a machine do a better job bringing the spirit than I do? And, you know, maybe it was personal righteousness. I don't know what it was. But I've noticed that we rely a lot on machines now to sort of teach things. I mean, we watch those videos in the initial conference we were talking about. And obviously the church pours tons of time and money into high production stuff. And, you know, there's the website, there's LDS.org. And so I was reading this book called The World's Most Human, and it's about chatbots and how they're getting more sophisticated. And each year there's a contest held in Ireland or something where the latest chatbots are brought, and a panel of judges interact via instant message with chatbots and humans, and they try to tell the difference. And often the chatbots sound more human than the humans do. And so the author of this book went through and studied for a year how to sound human so that he could win against chatbots. And I think that he actually won by a margin. But it occurred to me that chatbots, as they get more sophisticated, could actually turn into fantastic missionaries because they could have access to everything the church has ever published, and, you know, everything on the internet. And they're getting to the point now where, you know, there's auto blogging where you can plug in subjects and ideas into this program, and it will make a blog for you that can sound, you know, 99% human. So within the next few years, could we have these mega missionaries who will be ultra effective at teaching the gospel, because they would know within a few exchanges what this person is like, what they will react to, which buttons they should be pushing, and they'll have access to all this gospel material that they can bring up, you know, just at the drop of a hat. So I don't know, maybe that sounds like Ray Bradbury or something, but chatbot missionaries, more effective than the real thing. I don't know.
That's funny.
I don't think that missionaries usually are the standard of humans. So you might be able to make a chatbot of more human. But still, there's something incredibly creepy to me about that. And you know, guys, what do you think about, I mean, are we losing something with this direction? Like, yeah, it's incredibly outdated that missionaries knock on doors and all that stuff. But there's something sort of charming about it too. Like this romantic idea of, you know, human interaction. Like nobody else is doing that these days. But are we losing something with this?
Right, Stephen, and that's what you brought up in the very first post that you sent me.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of interesting to think about how long face-to-face missionary work has been going on. I mean, we can definitely trace it back to a Jesus, and you know, Saint Paul was the guy who went out and was spat upon and taught in the streets and was persecuted and has all these great stories to tell. And so, you know, when Dan was going on a mission, when I was going on a mission, I assume when you were going on a mission, Derek, when you would think about the mission, you would think about these, you know, Hubie Brown and J. Golden Kimball and Orson Pratt and all these mega missionaries who went out and did these amazing things, and you would think, my gosh, that could be me. I could go out there and do these same amazing things. I could encounter the devil and that evil preacher, and I could, you know, save that drug addict from their despair and things like that. But you're right. that it seems to me that going on to this more cyberspace mission would take a lot of the kind of the language of the hunt out of telling your missionary stories, because that's what happens, right? You come home and you go out on a date, and the way that the males impress the females, at least at BYU, is they tell the heroic stories of their mission, and they're like, you know, we had diarrhea, there were banana spiders in our hair, and it was like 9 o'clock at night, we'd been up since six, we'd been fasting for a week, and we decided to knock down one more street, and that was where we found this guy who became the next mission president, or something like that. I mean, those are great stories, and we love to tell them. Those are the stories that I wanted to come home and tell myself. But you're right, Derek. If we're on Facebook, it kind of takes out the potency of the story. It takes out sort of the sense of sacrifice, and I don't know.
So we were in our last few minutes of air-conditioned comfort at the chapel on the internet when that last last instant chat led to a baptism. So that's kind of the opposite, is what you're saying, Stephen.
Yeah. Well, we should hear from Emily, because in all likelihood,
I know I want her rebuttal for sure.
Are going to arise, and maybe we'll just have. Yeah. New kinds of stories to add to the missionary.
Yeah, tell us your mission. Tell us your homecoming talk, Emily. relate the kind of stories, especially the ones that related to Facebook missionarying.
I think I got the best of both worlds. You know, I have some of those gritty tracting stories where someone pulls a gun on you, or you know, being cornered by drug leaders and stuff like that. So we still had enough tracting in to get our fair share of suffering in, but. I think one thing that we would also see on Facebook is we would certainly have people at us, and they would turn out to be like anti. They'd be people that were like actively trying to bring the church down or something. And we wouldn't know that at first. We would accept their friend request, and we would discover over time, you know, maybe they would post things to our walls that were like anti-material or something. And since we would only get on, you know, once every 24 hours, we wouldn't necessarily see it right away. And so that would happen sometimes. That was about as gritty as it would get, is maybe someone that was against the church would add us. You know, I think when I came home and gave my homecoming talk, the whole time I talked about like regular missionary stories, and the last minute I said that I was a Facebook missionary, and that the way that missionary work was happening was changing, and that it was evolving, and just kind of preparing that congregation I was speaking to, because I knew that Facebook work was going to spread. They told us, you know, 2 years ago that every mission would eventually be Facebook. And so we would often tell people that.
And so the interesting question that comes up from what you said is there just inherently more drama in face-to-face missionary work? Or will we find ways to dramatize the cyberspace missionary work? I'm really interested to see how that plays out.
I think there's going to be drama in Facebook work, definitely. Nothing good like somebody pulling a gun on you, but you know, we all saw drama, I think every single one of us. And you know, whether it was like elders kind of getting with girls or anti-people, I mean, I had a couple of guys that I would add, and you know, they would hit on me or something, and then you just think, how am I going to go teach this person in person when they're flirting with me online? And so I kind of saw things in all sorts of ways.
Well, definitely a new world. Derek, any more thoughts on just how do you think the stories will be reshaped, or the whole mission as we know them? Is this going to be simply a two-hour-a-day thing, or can you see it going almost full media?
Yeah, well, I going back to something that Emily said at the beginning, that you kind of, as a missionary, you go where the people are, and that's what the church is always trying to do. It's actually, I think it's really admirable and makes a lot of sense that we would start going online because that's where the people are. And I think that this is an important quality about the way the missionary program functions that I've noticed, you know, over the years on a mission, and then especially teaching at the MTC, the big dramatic change in the curriculum that happened while I was there, that I believe is still being taught, is and Preach My Gospel, it's sort of based on that too. And so Preach My Gospel was a shift toward that, toward this too. But it's, there's a very strong push to follow the people where they are and to figure out and to understand the people better and to not just jump in and give these rote presentations, but to figure out really, do I understand this person and where they are in their life? How can I really help them the most? And so a lot of the training that we do, or that I did in the MTC, was to help missionaries learn how to follow, genuinely listen, like truly listen, truly try to understand, really try to connect with people. And so in a sense, I think in a big way, this is just another iteration of that, of that. And I don't know that that quality is always sort of talked about. I think that the standard story that we have in our culture is that missionaries knock on doors like all the time, and that maybe they give these memorized discussions or whatever. But I really think that the church over the last several years has been trying in really, really good ways to truly understand people and truly start listening to people, not, you know, just pretend to or try to, you know, be somebody that people can talk at, but really, really try to understand people. And I think that getting people, like connecting with people online, is a great way to do that, simply because people are doing that. I mean, that's how people are connecting online. So that's sort of a quality that I wanted to highlight, that it doesn't always get talked about. Missionaries really do try to understand people, and I think that's where a lot of the positive growth can happen, because of trying to do that, and that people, you can become more broad-minded that way too.
I really agree with what Derek said, and I was thinking, like, in terms of Facebook work and stuff with that, is if we were teaching someone online or started to notice maybe through someone's newsfeed maybe some issues they were dealing with, we would try and plan like blogs that we could write that would address their issues. So maybe it wasn't calling them out directly, but if something was weighing on their mind or their heart, we could really try and focus it to help them. And I really liked that a lot about the work, both Facebook and just in this Preach My Gospel era, that it was really trying to connect with the people. And I think I mentioned to you before that the Facebook page I have now, my current one, is my missionary one that I just turned into my personal one. I totally got rid of my original Facebook because, you know, you connect to the people and you love them so much that I wanted to have this as my personal Facebook because I wanted to stay connected to all these people that I'd been serving and working with on Facebook for a year and a half.
So does that help you in your Facebook persona now, knowing that you have friends from your mission and people that you taught? Maybe you wouldn't say everything that's on your brain the way you would with your personal Facebook page?
I'd say I only edit a little bit, but
okay.
When I said I was a kind of unconventional missionary, that was pretty true. I was pretty opinionated and willing to relate to people, you know, out there in the real world outside of Utah. So I would talk really directly with them and welcome their opinion. So I don't censor as much, but a little bit.
One of the things that's also interesting to me about doing so much on Facebook, and especially as Emily did, keeping that around, Facebook maintains all of your conversations, right? All of your instant messaging and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so you have this sort of spontaneous journal that you can actually go back and see what happened. Because, you know, when I think back on my mission, really the only things that I have to think back on are my face-to-face interactions with people. And perhaps after a particularly interesting interaction, I would go home and I would write it down in my journal. But that would be me writing down my perception of what had happened, which was probably, you know, far, far away from what had actually happened. But you could actually go back and say, those were the exact words that we exchanged, and you could see the story unfolding. I used to have this little theory that if we put little tiny cameras inside of missionaries' name tags so that they could have a video footage of their entire mission, it would totally throw off all of their stories. And like And so, girls, when you're on a date with return missionary and he starts telling you this story, say, prove it to me with the footage. And I'll bet you most of the time we'd go back and we wouldn't be able to find it because our mind had sort of created this story out of this material that we had. And we'd say, my gosh, my mission did not happen the way I thought it had happened. But you have this really interesting sort of primary document to see what in fact happened during, you know, 2 hours a day of your mission, which is just amazing to me. What will it be like for historians, you know, in 100 years to go back and see what missionary work was in fact doing from primary documents from Facebook instead of having to work from these secondary documents like we have to now?
Yeah, and Steve and I, you and I are face-to-face friends, as well as Facebook friends, of course. But it seemed like a year ago or something, you bought some thing that you can pay $50 or something, and they'll print out in a book your whole Facebook feeds for a year or something?
It's true, they will. But it's just the stuff on your wall, so it's
it's not your instant
messaging. Okay. I'm sure they'll get to that, but yeah. And I really enjoy reading it. I'm just a hilarious guy.
Well,
guys, I wonder how many NSA people have been converted by reading Emily's text messages.
That's so awesome.
Dan, before we go, I have one more sort of just a small question, but maybe Emily can address it. So how are iPads going to work? Because it seems like iPads are only going to be connected to the internet if you are, I mean, you won't be able to use an iPad at home, right? Like, missionaries don't have Wi-Fi at home, I would imagine. And what exactly is the reason for having iPads other than to make me jealous personally?
Well, we didn't have iPads, but I was in meetings with church headquarters where they told us they were coming. And what they told us in terms of the iPads was that they were not going to be used for Facebook. The purpose of them was to replace the area books, to get rid of that whole paper trail and just to have it all there digital. And that
you're calendaring and stuff, setting your appointments.
Calendar and area book where you updated teaching records.
Oh, right. Hello.
And so instead of those getting lost or the pages ripping out, they would always be there. And
would
also,
there be like an app that the church, like just an in-house, like just for missionary internal use?
I'm assuming so. I mean, they didn't tell us any of that specifics, but they said this is going to replace the area books. There's not going to be any more problems with paper or losing things. And they were also going to be used as a tool of sorts, like maybe to show people, I'm assuming, some of the church DVDs or to give them information instead of always having pamphlets. Now, if they've changed any of that from when they told us, I don't know, but basically, it was just a really good, solid replacement for the area books and not a means for Facebook.
Interesting.
Yeah, I actually thought of that when you asked that, Derek, that it might be, while you're teaching them, you know, you're in a Facebook-to-face thing, well, let's just click and watch on this 10-minute video right here in the middle of the teaching discussion or something. So.
Yeah, and I wonder if those videos would have to be loaded up on the actual device or if they'll have somehow internet connection, or I wonder how that'll work.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm assuming they're going to just have a lot of videos loaded up.
Right.
You know, because even when I was just out last year, it sure seems like we were giving out a lot of DVDs or playing DVDs all the time at lessons.
Yeah. So interesting. Thanks. Hey, you guys, I have just loved this conversation. Thank you so much. It's kind of fun to do these podcasts where we're just reacting to recent news, and I've loved deconstructing what it is, and I've loved Emily just helping us get a feel for what this means, these strange little announcements that we're going to do more online missionary work and go embrace the technologies and whatnot. I've just loved having that become much more concrete for us, so thank you for that. And Stephen, always love your crazy ideas, not crazy in a bad way as in like out of the blue, but just these fun angles that you do. And
actually, Dan, my nurse just came in and said that it's time for my pills, so
so truly the crazy. Now you'll probably put those in your cheek and spit them out so you can continue in your happy land.
Well, I don't want the angels to go away.
Love it, love it. But you're just always so insightful on how stories are shaped and how we do these things. And the stuff that you mentioned here at the end about primary documents and stuff like that, I'm just thrilled to have you. And Derek, thank you. You always are my access guy to what's happening in missionary work. And you were my partner in putting this together and figuring out some of the stuff that we wanted to do. And just always appreciate you, brother.
Oh, I love being on the show, and everybody should support Mormon Matters. Go donate, help Dan out. It's a great program.
Thank you. That's why I have you on. Do the pitch for me. No. Anyway, listeners, thank you for all that you do in that area financially, as well as your comments. And I think in this case, I definitely want your stories. Let's, besides Emily, who else was a Facebook missionary? Tell us the highs and the lows. Give us a better feel for that. Tell us what you're learning out there from the missionaries that you have serving currently as this unfolds. Let's keep this as a fresh conversation and sharing it. And especially when we post on the blog, that'll be sort of a permanent record that people can say, here's what's happening, and it's sort of unfolding in real time for us. I'd also, like I appealed at the beginning, love to know a little bit more about how the integration of sister missionaries as formal leaders in this new structure called the Mission Council is working, as well as anybody, please tell us how your bishops and your stake presidents and whatnot are really working with the council format and having women's voices be, you know, again, this is a step towards things that I think most of the listeners of this podcast would be very supportive of, and sometimes change doesn't happen as quickly as we'd like and all those different things, but we'd love to hear the stories of, you know, positive directions and things, as well as, I guess, the negative setbacks, but just appeal for everybody to be part of Mormon Matters conversation in this way. So thank you again, Emily, for coming on. You've really been our information supplier.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Great. And please come to the blog and interact with people if they have questions. I'd really love that. And Stephen and Derek, thank you again.
Definitely.
Take care,
thanks,
man.
Dan.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Cue the music.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Matters Podcast. To discuss this podcast with others, please check us out at mormonmatters.org. To keep this podcast alive or to join our support community, please consider a tax-deductible donation today at mormonmatters.org. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Brittany and Clayton Pixton. The Mormon Matters logo was generously provided by StudioCase.com. Thank you for listening.